Welcome to Fantastic Females, our adventure to finding the mythical island of freedom together. I'm Kalyani.
And I'm Rupali. We are your next door finance experts sharing our experiences in the world of money and energetics.
Hello, so today we will be breaking down some repeated terminology in finance in our trademark digestible way. We'll be going over theoretical explanations of technical terms and kind of laying the land out for you to understand. Join in the conversation.
So the idea is really to go through the theoretical aspects of the technical terms so that you understand what we're talking about when we're going into concepts of how you can actually go in and invest. So that's why this episode is very important for that reason. Let's start with financial markets. I mean, that's the broadest one of the broader definitions of, you know, the world of investments. So what is a financial market?
I think it's very similar to a physical market or a mall where buyers and sellers meet and they sell items. Here, the items are stocks or shares of companies. And these companies are publicly listed companies. We'll go a little bit into more detail of what this means in just a bit. And they do this in a setting that's called the financial market. Most of these markets are now based online. There used to be a big physical component of, fighting and jostling on the market floors. A lot of previous stock market-based movies show this, and they enjoy some drama from this scene. Not a lot of that happens. Whatever happens is also for sentimental value nowadays. So they're all online markets, and buyers and sellers are exchanging stocks in exchange for a value or a price.
And also, just to elaborate on that, it's funny because I was just thinking that, four Bloomberg screens with lots of red and yellow and green actually does feel like a market where people are screaming and shouting at times, especially in these volatile times. So it's interesting that we still kind of have elements of that hyperactivity.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. And in terms of, maybe let's also define what a company is. I think, it's such a broadly used term. So it's one of the easier concepts where a company is an institution it's an entity that is registered as one single, like an individual, like a person. Like we have our certificates and our passports. A company is something that's registered that has its own license to operate and do what it does.
Yeah, exactly. A company is the smallest individual unit in a financial market, and it's simply representing a business. And I would like to now introduce the terminology of an IPO, which is initial public offering. It's a hot term to discuss nowadays, especially in the UAE. We're going through a period of a lot of popular IPOs in the country. Currently, there's a lot of talk about the Empower IPO, which I think happened today. Previously, we've seen Diva, Salik, etc. Today, as in the day of recording this episode. So previously, we've had Diva, Salik, and a few more interesting ones are coming up. Basically, this happens when think of yourselves as a business owner, and you've come to a point where you've kind of put as much of your funds as you were comfortable with in the business. And now you want it to grow. You want to scale it to a bigger, larger extent. That obviously will demand some capital and money. And your options are either borrowing from family and friends. Most people don't want to do that at that level, or going to a bank. A bank would a lot of times have very rigorous restrictions. And thirdly, you could raise money from the public, and this has its own pros and cons.
So when you raise debt, or when you're borrowing money, or when you're, you know, doing an IPO to raise money through the stock market, then this also appears differently in the company's financial statements. And so that's also a motive in terms of, you know, that's also considered when deciding which route to go about. It's not only about, okay, this is available, let me do this. It's also from a longer term strategic perspective, what looks better on the company's financials.
That's very interesting to know. This is quite obvious, but I'm still mentioning it to give more clarity that companies require these extra funds for additional growth, for research and development, for paying for new facilities, etc., etc. So the demand for that extra capital is quite clear. In terms of when they go through an IPO, they decide to release a certain number of shares and at a value that's been agreed by various stakeholders. In exchange for the money that they raise, the funds that they raise, they agree to go through some rigorous due diligence with the governing bodies in the country and to declare their financial data publicly.
Right. So exactly. So it's quite a rigorous exercise that's gone in. So as the, you know, investor, we may not see it, but at the back end, there are investment banks that are doing work. There are consultants that are in place to really have a fair valuation, because the worst thing that a company can do is to price their, share very high and then have not as much of a demand for it, because that, it's more of a, like a reputation thing also, that they weren't able to raise enough money or whatever it is. So for this reason, it's a very, very important. And like Kalyani mentioned, sometimes there are heavy regulations that are governing these things, because, you know, there are many laws in terms of competition, in terms of monopolies and so forth. And so, so it's super important that, you know, that healthy competition remains in the economy.
And I would just like to bring a side note here as well. Comparing stocks to crypto, I have a lot of people who asked me my opinions on crypto. And I think these laws and these rigorous due diligence practices are what make stocks in general more safe and more reliable than crypto industry at the moment. Because these laws are in place to basically protect us as investors against any kind of fishy calculations, fishy fundraising by companies. So that's about an IPO. One interesting thing that I would also like to mention is, maybe Rupali can add to this, is that the company only earns from that initial IPO, and any further increase in price, obviously a company hopes that the price keeps going up of its shares. Any further increase will only benefit the shareholders. So they don't benefit from subsequent selling of shares, subsequent trading of shares. They only benefit from the initial trading. And
I just wanted to add to that, actually, because an interesting idea or concept is, I mean, you know, when a company is doing an IPO, that means they're giving a portion of their company up, the ownership, they're giving it up to whoever wants to invest. So it's really the people out there. And, you know, there are not as many restrictions in terms of who and, you know, so forth. So it's quite a big deal to, you know, let's say you have a company to then give a percentage up. And why would you do that? You know, the reason why you would do that is, as Kalyani mentioned, to raise money to grow. And in this, by this means, basically, you can, the company can raise money, but not have to return it until such a time when the company is profitable. And so that's super important, because the company doesn't take very much risk. Yes, the cost of that is that it gives up ownership, which, you know, could have implications in the future if you have a majority investor or whatever it is, but that's obviously priced in. But that's just something what I wanted to highlight.
Yeah. And so let's take the example of Facebook or Meta now. And Mark Zuckerberg started Meta, Facebook then, from his dorm room at university. And he started doing really well. The company started doing really well and came to a point where over years, it had a team that needed more funds. The operations needed more funds, and they decided to go public. But in most cases, this is something that I found quite interesting. They're the single most shareholding person. How do I say this in real English? They retain, so people like Mark Zuckerberg.
The largest share of ownership.
Yes. So people like, so Mark Zuckerberg would still, even after going public, retain the largest single share of ownership, meaning he would be the only individual with 12 to 18% typically of shares of the company. So he still maintains a majority stakeholdership in that sense and a say in the company's operations in that sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah, which is very important because, I mean, you don't want the a random person out there on the street that you don't even know to be making investment decisions for this business you've grown. So it's the company's basically priced that in.
Yeah. Two things, also, I'm just mentioning things that are coming up. And, my previous job used to be with Michael Kors, and one of our main competitors was Tory Burch. And Michael Kors is a publicly listed company. And you could see that, the pricing, the collection, the creative kind of, leaning was so commercially driven by what the shareholders, the common man, the shareholders wanted versus Tory Burch, which remains a privately owned company, and it's got more decisive kind of power in terms of creativity, in terms of pricing, etc. So I think that's interesting to note. And also what's interesting to note, which is relevant recently, is when people like founders like Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk retain this majority control, sometimes they can affect the price of the stock by liquidating their majority shares, which recently was rumored to happen when Elon Musk needed funds to buy Twitter.
Which means, I just want to highlight, liquidating means selling.
Yes, thank you. So the rumor was, obviously there's no way of confirming this for sure, that because Twitter was such a big deal, he sold a lot of his Tesla stocks to generate that extra income. And Tesla's stock prices came tanking down, which takes us right into the concept of prices.
Yes. So, the price of the share, as we explained, it's set at the outset. And then thereafter, it's driven by various factors, different factors such as, you know, how well the company does, what's the view on the strategy of the company in terms of growth in the future, how will it kind of fare against its competitors in the future, management, so forth. Also things like, you know, the sector as a whole. So if the tech industry has a bad patch going on, then companies that are actually doing well may also sell off, which means prices may drop as a result of that because of sentiment. Other things that impact prices is things such as inflation. So if a company is expected to have higher costs of operating, then are they able to then pass the cost on to the consumer to then result in profits that are equal or higher? Interest rates. If interest rates are going up, then, you know, the company may need financing, and it may be more expensive to finance. And interest rates actually have a few implications on stock prices, which we'll go into a little bit later because that's slightly more technical. And the big topic, I think, today and over the past 2 to 3 years, especially since COVID, is sentiment. And what sentiment, Kalyani? What do you think of sentiment and how it impacts markets?
This is such a big topic, and it is something that was quite new to me when I started trading. I didn't expect sentiment to play a bigger role than technicals or numbers. You kind of see all these numbers on Bloomberg screens, as you mentioned, and you think that I believe that the financial markets were purely number-based, purely logical. It's anything but. Sentiment plays a big role in what happens to the price of of any stock or even the general kind of movement of the market. And by sentiment, we mean how mass psychology comes together. And it has a very distinct way of behaving, which is different to how an individual would rationally make decisions. So mass psychology is very much herd behavior. You follow the herd, sheep mentality. And what this leads to is, in a good way, some sort of predictability in terms of repeating patterns. So if a stock has gone to, let's say, price of AD10 before, USD10 before, it's likely to reach USD10 again because masses like familiarity. But the negative aspect of this is also that there's a lot of anxiety, fear, greed that builds into the emotions of the market. And we've mentioned this before in the context of inflation, that there's this whole kind of anxiety about the boy cried wolf kind of situation where there's so much fear mongering, and that plays a huge role in how the market behaves.
Yeah, this sentiment has really, you know, news basically. If you watch news, if you're reading headlines, if it's, you know, positioned in a certain way, exaggerated or whatever it is, which then leads to fears in investors, then that may result in people panicking, selling the stock, and not having buyers at that price, which ultimately results in the sellers selling at a lower price. So I just want to highlight the forces of supply and demand. And an example of this is where sentiment drives some kind of panic. So let's say you've read something that is, you know, highlighting that the markets are going to do really badly. You're going to lose money. The economy is going into a recession, and people have really then exaggerated it on the news. That could set about panic, where about people then start selling their stocks because they're scared of losing money. So if too many stocks are being sold, but there aren't enough buyers at that price, then the price then usually drops, and the price then settles at the level at which people are actually buying again. So supply and demand play such a big role in the way prices move, and supply and demand are driven to a large extent by sentiment. Another thing that really drives panic and, you know, behaviors, basically, traditional finance is, you know, the terms of finance typically were, the key assumptions are that both market and investors are perfectly rational, as Kalyani said. That's an assumption. The investors truly care about, you know, the core, like logical reasoning. Investors have perfect self-control. And we know human nature. Human nature is that none of that is really true, because people are not, there's no one that's rational, really. We're all basing decisions on what we know, what we've recently heard, what we may have read about at the outset initially when we were going into a specific field, and we kind of anchor to that. So that's anchoring bias. And so these behavioral aspects get really difficult to kind of put our finger on and say, and make forecasts and say, this is what will happen, because you just don't know what people do and you don't know what herd mentality drives. For that reason, you know, fundamentals, so how well the company does is also super important, but to have your, you know, to gauge the pulse of this economy in terms of sentiment, that's also quite important.
Yeah. Very well said, Rupali. Just taking a step back, I will kind of go through it in the way I find it easy to understand and follow, and taking from what Rupali just mentioned. So the law of demand and supply needs a trigger to come into force, right? The law of demand and supply on such a large scale can't function on its own and decide on a price, which we refer to as the equilibrium price or the selling price. And this trigger should actually come from different forces, more so such as the company's performance, etc. But like Rupali said, it doesn't come from, there's a very small percentage of investors, especially retail investors. You and I are referred to as retail investors, whereas big institutions are referred to as institutional investors. They're referred to as market makers. When it comes to retail investors, there are very few investors who actually do any type of research. Most people listen to the news, get WhatsApp alerts, their friends tell them what they're investing in, and base their decisions on that. So if you're listening to this podcast, you're already better than 95% of the people out there in the stock markets. So from the 5% as well, there are very few who will go through financial statements and understand them. And that just doesn't have an implication on the price action in the price movement in the market, which means that 95% is a large number, and that is fully driven by this kind of fear and greed mentality. It isn't even the actual news. It's the interpretation of the news. And we have so many examples that can be mentioned here. A recent example is when the pound lost its value drastically when Liz Truss was made PM. And it regained its value when she resigned and Rishi Sunak was made PM. It carried on gaining in value. When Trump was going to become the US president, there was so much anxiety about that in the market beforehand that the market had a big downtrend before. Once he got elected and the market had had its hue and cry, sentimental drama about it, it settled into thinking or showing the sentiment that, okay, fine, this is not so bad. And the big price drop had already been priced in. When we say priced in, it means that that has already been taken into account, or that emotion sentiment has already had an impact on the price of the stocks. So we're giving you different ways of thinking about this, and hope you're able to follow us.
In a simple way, basically, like a shop, when you're going to buy a product, you want to pay the lowest price. So the buyer always wants to pay the lowest price. The seller always wants to charge the highest price. And so the shop wants to make money. And so they charge the highest price. And similarly, in the markets, it's all about buyers and sellers. If you have big buyers selling, if you have big buyers buying large quantities, then that could impact prices in one way. Whereas if you have sellers that are just selling large quantities, such as the example of what Kalyani mentioned of Elon Musk, where he's a large seller and people panicked when he said, I'm selling. So that kind of the buyer and seller dynamic really drives prices.
Again, we don't even know if he actually sold his share. It's the interpretation or the fear of the rumor that he sold his share. So there's such a large extent of emotions kind of playing into these numbers that is quite interesting to see the behavioral side of things. So why do people buy? I want to go into now understanding how we make money from the markets. And why would people buy would be simply because they are expecting the prices of the shares to go up. This is also referred to as being bullish. You may have heard this term a lot. So people who expect the prices to go up are referred to as bulls. And the tendency of expecting the price to go up is referred as being bullish. And why do people sell? They sell because they believe that the share prices will go down. This is referred to as being bearish. And the people who believe the prices will go down are referred to as bears. An easy way to remember why bullish is referred to as bullish, why there's like an animal-based analogy here, it was kind of interesting for me to find out about, is that bulls fight with their horns up always. So going up is referred to as being bullish because that's the analogy. Bearish, from what I remember, bears tend to pin their prey down, which is why bearish tendencies are about going down and negativity. How you make money is a combination of understanding emotions and also forces of demand and supply. And the key is to know when these emotions change in order to profit. The emotions basically go between fear and greed. And this is coming from interpretation of news, not even the real news.
Especially on the downside. So that's fear and greed. On the upside, it's when people are being overly kind of positive based on baseless news, and then they expect the company to do really well, be very profitable in the next quarter. But then when results come out, there's a downside surprise whereby there's disappointment. And so that then results into selling stocks, which then drives prices lower. So I think it's like Kalyani rightfully said, it's all about emotions. So that's super important. And the two ways, I just want to highlight, Kalyani, two ways on how people make money in the stock market and what the dynamic is. So the one is the prices, as I've mentioned, and two is dividends. So some companies decide to issue dividends on a quarterly or semi-annually basis, whereby you get, say, $5 for every share that you own, 20 cents for every share you own. That completely depends on the company and how they structure it. But that's linked to the company's profitability and their cash flow. And that's the way, that's their way of kind of giving back as an income. So those are the two ways you can make money.
And at this point, I would plug in a course that I have been teasing you all with. The name of the course is Investing Starter Pack. And it will be launching on Trading Mom's platform now on the 20th of November instead of 14th of November. And it will go into all basic details of what the stock market is and take you up. It will take you from being a total beginner to having an active investment portfolio, which is really exciting. And it will be a self-paced pre-recorded course. We will be launching in the coming week, and all the details will be on my Instagram at TradingMum.
So basically what you've heard is a very, you know, we've barely scratched the surface. It was just introductory. And Kalyani's course is really going to give you the real juice of the stock market.
Yes, while keeping it digestible and easy to understand. That's kind of something that we'll never lose focus of. So please share this podcast, leave your reviews, your comments to support us on our journey. We are so passionate about making your lives more abundant with this information.
So with that, we bring this episode of our financial adventure to an end. Please follow us on all social media platforms at Fantastic Females.
None of the information provided is financial advice, and Fantastic Females is not a financial advisor.
The information provided is educational only. It is general in nature and does not take into account your personal circumstances.
Please seek a professional for your finance needs.